Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello everyone, welcome to the show. It's me, it's your old pal Wilson. Hope you're good, hope you're well. The sun is coming out, the weather's getting warmer. I love that, makes me feel good. Hope you're all doing all right. Firstly, before we get into any other things, all the other admin, let's start with the important admin, and that's saying a big hello to our newest patrons, Anthony Dowd and Alice Birdwood. Welcome aboard. Nice to have you here. Thank you to all of our wonderful patrons. Thank you to our new patrons. Much obliged to you. Thanks for coming on. Also, we've got a note from patron Danny Phillips. Hello, mate. Just signed a petition for Nancy Carter Bradley as I'm listening to the episode now. Such an inspirational woman. Who has been through so much. Mate, nice one. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. If you are listening to this, and you haven't, do sign Nancy's petition. There'll be a link to that on her episode. It's very important that we get that signed. It's only a minute. It takes you half a second, and it doesn't affect your life, but it will affect the lives of many, many others. So please do that. That would be amazing. David Harris is back. Hello, David, mate. Your continued support is wonderful. Love you, mate. Great stuff as always. Bloody right, David Harris. Thank you, mate. To become a patron for early access to behind the scenes videos and more, go to patreon.com/membranepodcast. Or click through the link tree in the podcast description and all of my social bios. So click on the link tree and that will take you, to everything that we do. You can get access to our coffee beans through Wogan Coffee, our merch through Buy That Merch. Those guys, Stacey and Mark, wonderful people doing wonderful things. Everything's there. My live shows, our live shows, because we're doing some live ones. In Tunbridge Wells, producer Paul and I. So click on that link, on that link tree. It takes you to everything that we do, everything I do, like shows, everything that producer Paul does as well. It's all there. Click on the link tree. It's in all of my bios and all of my social media, and it's attached to this podcast as well. So do that for us. That would be much appreciated. That's the admin out of the way. Well done, everybody. We got through it. Well done. Well done. So let's get into it, shall we? Now, our patrons would have already had this on our YouTube channel for a week. Now, that's the thing. If you become a patron, you get access to the videos. Oh, yeah, we video these now. My guest this week is Matt Richardson. Matt Richardson, damn fine man, damn fine comic. I've known Matt for a few years. Always keep him on for ages. And we finally made it happen. We did this one together. We did it in the Islington Radio studio. So thanks to Islington Radio for letting us come up in Archway. And it was good to do it in person. We haven't done one in person for ages. We used to do it all the time at Comedy Central. We'd get guests to come and meet us there in Camden. And obviously since then, some mad dickhead had a bat in a market. Changed the landscape a shade, didn't it? But it was nice to be in person with Matt. Had a really nice chat. Had a nice chat with him outside of it as well. We've known each other a while. Really good chat. And it was quite enlightening. Obviously I've known him a while, but I didn't know him, so it was good to talk about things. Like he's got like pure OCD, we talked about that, as well as many other things, which you'll hear in the episode. So without further ado, coming up in a minute is Matt Richardson.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
Insane in the Membrane.
Ah, here we are, mate. There's no big introduction either, we just get on with it.
Lovely.
Cool, man. Funnily enough, having worked with you the other week, I can't believe I nicked your phone. I don't even know how I did it.
Because they don't even have the same cover, do they?
No, it wasn't until... I didn't rush straight to the tube.
No.
I just meandered. So I went upstairs on the boat and looked over, because I always have a nice look.
Yeah.
You know, comedy's all right. And I took a slow stroll back to Westminster Tube. And it wasn't until I got on the platform, the train rolled in, and I went like that to see if I got my phone, because I've dropped my phone underneath trains about 3 or 4 times.
Really?
I had it knocked out of my hand once. I've had this, you know, so I always check it.
Yeah.
And I went like that, and I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, shit. So I run straight back up.
Yeah.
As I get out of the tube, Belle rings me, and she's all like, yeah, you've got Matt's phone. I'm on my way back. I'm coming back. So I didn't know whose it was. So I'm running back. And then when I got there, and I ran back, I gave it to you. And then I went back underneath the gig and then went in and said to Belle, and like, I've given it to him. And then she went, she goes, and they told the crowd.
Well, I did.
I wish I'd known, I would have done something.
It was one of those where I was backstage, like desperately looking for it, being like, where have I fucking put this? And there was a point where I went, maybe Rich has taken it. I went, no, that's not happening. I'm going mad. And I said to backstage, I was texting Belle. But I went on stage and went, because someone came off as I was looking for it, and I just worked out that you may have taken it. So I was a bit sort of, I wasn't ready to go back on stage. So I went, sorry, I'm not in the right frame of mind because Rich has taken my phone. And I thought, basically, I was like, well, I'm going to turn this into some big thing night. Yeah. And then you brought it back in 10 minutes. So I didn't really have the chance to make it this big epic moment with the audience.
I would have loved, if I'd have known.
You'd have come back on,
We might have made it a thing. Because what I love is when comedians fuck around with each other.
Of course,
I love that.
Exactly.
I really love that.
Yeah, and especially when comedians, like, I like the idea of like the camaraderie in a green room.
Yeah.
So when you see that on stage, I think it's really nice. Yeah, if comedians are mates, I think for an audience, when I used to go to comedy, I'd be like, oh my God, they're all pals. This is amazing. That's my favourite bit. So
yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Next time.
I'll do it on purpose. but this is, people, this podcast is like the basis is mental health.
Yeah.
But what people, as soon as people hear that, they kind of, you can feel them when I talk to people about it, like when I'm trying to get guests on, and they go, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And then you can see them working out, and like, oh, I don't know if I want to be, I don't know if I feel exposed.
Yeah.
But really, when you listen to the podcast, it is just too. People having a chat like you would in a pub.
Yeah.
And that's how I think people will, another way of helping people take care of their mental health. It doesn't have to be medication or this and the other, just having a chat with someone.
It makes, you know what? So I like talking about it because I agree with you. And like I'm on like medication. I've been for like years on and off.
Really?
So I've got OCD.
Oh, right.
Since I was a teenager, I've had it. And I remember like when I first kind of went to the doctors and got medication, I'd never told anyone about all this stuff. And I remember telling my mates about it and being like, oh, I've been to the doctor about this. And just saying, I've been to the doctor and they've told me I've got OCD. Like that was better than taking the pills almost. Just because the horrible thing is it's this secret that builds up, isn't it, inside you, and it gets all this sort of importance to it that isn't there because you kind of are trying to keep this deep dark secret of your mental health problems. Yeah. Whereas as soon as I said to my mates, they're like, "Oh yeah, well I do this," and you're like, "Oh God, we're all in the same boat," and actually. You feel so much less alone, and that's a big part of it. Like, the suffering alone is awful.
And like you say, you build it up.
Of course. Yeah. And then as soon as you pop that balloon, you're like, oh, this is fine. No one really kept, like, no one, it's not that big a deal to everyone else, so maybe it's all right for me as well.
Do you know what triggered it? Or just a
thing? No, it just, you know what, it started, I was about 18, and I, what they call, and it's really interesting, I saw George Ezra was talking about this the other day, I've got this thing called Puro OCD, so I don't have any compulsions.
No.
It's just the obsessive thought patterns. Oh. So things like, I would watch, it was all about medical things. So like I would watch a documentary about, say, for example, HIV, and I'd be like, well, I've got HIV, like, and I'd be obsessed with the idea that I had it, and I'd go for tests, and then I'd be obsessed, I wouldn't believe the tests and all this, or cancer and things. Whoa. But then I started to get obsessed. So I used to make a note of all my, like, time my obsessive thoughts and how far apart they were and make a note of it and stuff. It was exhausting. But, and it, you know, it comes and goes. So like I've had periods of not being on medication for a few years. Mm. I started again just at lockdown because I was like, I'm going to be in the house by myself a lot.
Yeah.
This is going to be a problem. I'm good when I'm busy, but like, but I worry about everything. I obsess over like work, like, and it's quite stressful.
Yeah.
So just that medication just takes the edge off.
Is it negative thoughts?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And it'll be things that are like, so like I remember watching a documentary about serial killers once, and it's sort of, it's weird what it latches onto, and it's always like not very nice stuff, like dark stuff. Like when I used to read about it online, there's people that are like obsessed with the idea, they worry obsessively over if they're a paedophile or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's all these different things, and worry about their sexuality or whatever it is. And it's sort of, you know, you pull yourself apart and you sort of question yourself. But so I've had it before. It's been about like serial killers or things like that. You worry that you're that, or you worry that you're not this, and you obsess over it for like hours and hours a day. It's really weird.
Mate, that's exhausting.
It is. But when you, the horrible thing is though, is when you feel like you're better, say for example, like I've had periods where I've not been on medication because I've just forgotten taking it because I've been feeling great.
Yeah.
And so I don't bother with it. And then it creeps back in slowly. And then you go, oh, I'm not very well. And you sort of don't realise your slow descent back into it.
Mm.
Until I remember just before I went back on medication, I was away. I took my younger brother away for his birthday and he's 21. And I called my girlfriend and I was like, oh, I'm really worried. Like, because we were in America. And I was like, I'm really worried that, like, what if I die in my sleep or something and my brother has to fly my body back? Like, because he's autistic, like, he wouldn't be able to do it. And I called my girlfriend and went, I'm really worried about if this happens. And she went, you need to go back to the doctor, I think, because that isn't a normal thing. And it was, like, consuming. It was, like, ruining the holiday. Because like, if I die or something, that's going to, how's he going to deal with that?
Yeah.
That's all I could think about.
It's such an extreme thing to worry about.
And, like, now I go, what a weird, bizarre thing. But at the time, it felt like the most important thing in the world that this was a thing that I had to address. But I called Sam and she went, I think you need to go back to the doctors, don't you, mate? That isn't a normal thing to be thinking about. But when it's like anything, when you're in it, you don't realise. You know, when you're in the throes of that, it's only once you're feeling better, you go, God, that was really weird. So I'm quite happy to talk about it because I feel like the more I talk about it on things like this as well, like the less of a sort of elephant in the room it is in my own head.
Yeah, man.
The more people who know about it, the less of a big deal it is to me is how
absolutely.
I feel about it.
And I think this is what I like having conversations with people about these things.
Yeah.
Because I don't know about these things.
No.
So it enlightens me and enlightens people that are listening. And it's good to have someone that's actually got something that needs assistance and it needs help.
Yeah.
There's so many people trying. This comes up a minute at the moment quite a lot for me because it's really fucking me off, especially in our industry. People are looking for a diagnosis of something, like they want to have a thing. And it's not necessarily because they want to be, that's why my life's in turmoil, because of that's why. It's like they want to USPs and then they can go, oh, I'm going to go to Edinburgh and do a show about that because that's my thing. And you're like, that's a tenuous link to something.
There is a comedian who I remember another comic telling me, and I won't name them because I don't think that's fair, but apparently they did like lots about mental health. And then other comedians started talking about it and they went, I can't believe they're doing that. Mental health's my thing. And you're like, well, then you're not, that's not how it works, is it?
No.
But they saw it as their USP. And I was like, well, you just wanted it for the USP.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Whereas, you know, I'd rather not have it.
No, of course not.
But like, it feels like there's people now, they want this diagnosis and want the thing to kind of talk about, be it online or...
Yeah.
You know, and if that makes them feel better about it, if it's really there, fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely, that's the thing. If it's really there, of course. And I think we, from doing this podcast, I now realise that there's elements of all things in all of us.
We've all got bits and bobs. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it is, yeah, depression is a thing that debilitates me. That when that hits, and I don't take any medication for it because I'm just worried about doing, you know, I'm like, once I start getting into that.
Because you like coming, yeah. Basically. That's why you don't take
I'm
any
really
medication.
Really up to come, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't
see,
wanna...
I always say when they always talk about, you know, the male contraceptive pill, I'm just like, get them all on sertraline. They'll never come again.
Everyone I know is on that.
Yeah, I'm on sertraline.
Is that what that is?
They off-label treat it for OCD.
Okay.
So it's I'm on like a low dose, but it's that's what I use it for. They give it for OCD and stuff. And it works. Like it really helps me out. Even though I think a lot of it is feeling like you've got the crutch of it.
Yeah.
Like for me, even when I go when I've gone back to the doctors, I haven't even taken one yet. The fact I've got the prescription makes me feel better almost. Weird sort of, because you're not alone, you've got something to help. And I think that's really useful. But loads of people, it's not for everyone medication. And like as much as I joke about the coming thing, I don't have any side effects from it.
Okay.
Whereas a lot of people do.
Yeah.
But and also when I've not taken it for a few years, if I've been like 2 or 3 years off it, the first 2 weeks are fucking gnarly. Like they're horrible. Yeah. Like you don't sleep properly. It feels like you're coming up.
Fuck.
A lot of people that have taken it for a few days and stopped makes you really like sertraline especially, it makes you really nauseous. You feel sort of like out of body for a few days. And the positive effects don't start till like 6 weeks in.
Wow.
So you've got to go through like a week or two of like really not very feeling very nice with the knowledge that that might happen in the end. But I know loads of people that have tried it for a bit and then just couldn't hack it.
Was that bad?
Yeah, I think so. Like I started on it, it was really bad, but it gets easier each time because you're more used to it. But the thing that's in SSRI antidepressants, you've got some, it always makes you nauseous because hormone or whatever it is that's giving you, there's receptors for it in your stomach and they don't know why. And they're not used to being used. So it makes you really nauseous. It can make you really nauseous. Like that was my big problem is like, I just couldn't eat or anything for a few days.
It's like when you see the side effects on a lot of things.
Yeah, man, it's terrifying.
There's side effects on everything.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You know, like the side effects on ibuprofen for some people. But and I know it's not for everyone, but I've done like counselling and all the other things. But I find for me that really helps.
Yeah.
Is that why you've never bothered? Is because you're like, I don't want the side effects or all that. What scares you about it?
I mean, because I did it for a bit. So in the early 2000s, I was on antidepressants, and I remember I used to work at these festivals, and I remember being on them, and someone put liquid ecstasy in my. I put it in my drink.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise. And so I'm glugging this drink. So I'm coming up. Well, I thought it was coming up. And then just kind of went, I just got so level.
Yeah.
I was like, nothing's, I wasn't up or
they
down.
Don't, it doesn't, because the receptors that ecstasy works on, when you're taking antidepressants, they're full, which is why it feels like you're coming up when you first start taking, not all antidepressants, but I think some of them make you feel like you're going to that. But it's like the build-up without the release, I suppose.
And I think, I don't want to become reliant on it.
But you know what? I think a lot of these things are chronic conditions.
Yeah, right.
So that's like being diabetic and saying, I just don't want to rely on insulin. Do you know what I mean? And I think there's a big thing, like, you know, my mum is, and all of her friends, all they talk about is their ailments.
Right?
But we don't talk about mental ailments in the same way. Like, I know people who have got, like, you know, long running sort of, you know, pain problems and all that. And they talk about it all the time and it's fine. But no one talks about being depressed all the time and having to take things for it forever.
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing is, if you look at depression as it comes and goes, but it's a chronic thing maybe, you know, it could affect you for life.
Yeah.
And go, well, you take a pill and it makes it better. Like, why is that no different to taking insulin every day or, you know, those pills that just, or people who have HIV and they take the pills to get it to zero in their blood. Yeah. Like, they're not going, well, I've got to rely on it though. So I think, you know, but that's... Yeah. That's a bit of a stigma that I understand people have, but I've sort of always gone, well, it makes me feel fine.
Yeah, why would you not?
Because I started, it was just before I started doing comedy, it happened. And I think I threw myself into comedy so much because when I was first started, the 10 minutes on stage, because you've got to concentrate so much, was the only time I wouldn't feel like it.
Right, yeah.
And and the buzz after being on stage, like it took me like an hour or so to be like, oh my God, I've not obsessed over anything. So I gigged every night of the week because I was self-medicating with comedy.
Do you know, it's funny. I've said this before. That the 20 minutes when I'm on stage, it's the best feeling.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with attention. And I realised that talking to a few comics, that when the first lockdown happened, and they were going, oh, we need the crowds, we need the attention. I'm like, I don't need the attention of other people. I love making people laugh. That's why I do it. But that 20 minutes is the most peaceful that I am.
Because there's no space for anything else.
Yeah.
like, if you start thinking about other things, the gig, you're not in the right headspace for a gig, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it is like, whatever's going on in your life, getting on stage takes so much concentration. You go, I can't think about anything else, because you're going, right, that bit did that, and that did, so now I'm going to go to that bit, or maybe I should skip, you know, all those bits that are going in your head. I watched a documentary years ago about narcolepsy, right? Mm. And there was this ballerina on it, and she had terrible narcolepsy apart from when she danced.
Oh, wow.
Because the concentration levels in her brain were so much, there wasn't room for it almost.
Yeah.
And I feel like comedy's the same when you're on stage. There's not any room for any problems, because that's everything you need to think about.
Yeah, that's true. Noel Faulkner, that used to run the Comedy Cafe, who had Tourette's, but the twitchy one. So he's always on the move. And I remember him saying to me, he goes, I'm exhausted all the time, because I'm just always constantly moving. But when the only time he wouldn't do it was when he was on stage.
Yeah.
He did a stand-up show of his life called Shake, Rattle and Noel.
That's such a good title.
It was excellent. But, you know, he's performing, you know, he's acting in things, and he wouldn't twitch because he's got that, like you say, it's focused.
Yeah. It's really, I think there's a lot of comics who do lots of gigs, I think, without realising that that's why, because it's like serenity when you're on stage, especially when a gig's going perfectly.
Yeah.
It feels like meditating. Yeah, it's like, you know, that perfect calm in the middle of the storm. It's great.
Yeah. I love that. That's what I missed, was that I didn't have to think about bills or whatever else was troubling me.
Yeah.
I've just got to try and make this bunch of people in front of me laugh, and that's it.
Yeah.
20 minutes.
But then the other side of that is spending a lot of time travelling alone and things. Well, you've got plenty of time for your thoughts.
Oh, I know. Do you know what? I when I do remember to put a film on or read a book or something that isn't thinking, then I'm like, oh, I feel great.
Yeah.
But I always spend hours laying there, just laying there, going over everything shit and everything I've ever done. And then suddenly it's like, I'm going to go to the gym in a minute. It's 9 a.m. I'm going to go to the gym in a minute. Look at my watch, 2 p.m. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Could have gone by now.
And then the annoying thing is, I mean, like, I try and exercise, but I'm not great at it. I hate it.
Yeah.
But I do feel better when I do it.
Absolutely.
And I hate that is true. Because everyone says, oh, you should just do a bit of exercise. You're like, that doesn't work. And then you do it and you go, this is the best of all of them.
Just moving.
Yeah.
It's funny, actually. My phone keeps telling me that you got your step count and all that, and it keeps saying, oh, you haven't walked as far as you did last year. And I'm like, there was nothing else to do last year. I used to walk for 3 hours a day around Victoria Park. Just fuck off.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas now there's stuff again.
It's things to do.
But you know what? Being in the car and stuff, I used to hate when it was really bad because you'd just be with your thoughts. Whereas now, I'll listen to audiobooks in the car and it doesn't bother me being in the car. But you just got to fill that. Like, my girlfriend is always like, I can't just sit and chill. I've got to be reading or watching something or be on my phone. And she's like, why are you like that? And I'm like, I'm trying to fill the void because I don't like the idea of what happens when I'm not.
Yeah.
I need to be stimulated at all times, basically, to fend it off.
Yeah.
So I just hit the microphone.
How do you sleep all right?
Once I get to sleep, but it takes me ages to get to sleep. I can't switch off.
We've been doing those sleep stories. We have those. It's brilliant.
Yeah, they're great.
Matthew McConaughey. And you know you're in trouble when you reach the end of the story. Oh, shit.
Yeah, I know. If you know what happens at the end of those on the karma.
Yeah.
They're great. They are really good. I like the Nordland night train. I like all the train ones. But I'm the same as you. You get to the end and you're like, she's long asleep. And I'm like, fuck.
Mate.
I've just got to lie here now. Because if I put another one on, she'll go, don't put another one on, it's just woken me up. And I'm like, all right, I'll just lie staring at the ceiling. My girlfriend falls asleep so quickly, whereas I'm there like going over everything that's ever happened in my life.
This is the thing, right? You stress about things, you go, oh, why did you say that thing in 1995? Oh, that person. And you're like, that person doesn't exist anymore.
No.
They've gone off and living around. They're not thinking about what you said to them in 1995 or whatever you said in 1987 or whenever it was. They're either dead or they're gone with their own life.
But also, like, I always like rake over mistakes. I worry about the future. I'm terrible for worrying about, like, well, that's not going to happen, and then I'm going to have to, like, I always worry about my job, and I always worry that I'm going to have to retrain. I'm like, fuck, what happens? Things are fine at the moment. Like, I'm quite busy, but I'm terrible for what ifs.
Yeah, same.
That's awful for me, even though it doesn't exist. And I've worried about things. I remember years ago worrying about something and obviously nothing ever happened. Like, you know, I was like, oh, what if I'm going to have to go and do that and, you know, do this? No, none of it's ever happened. But I wasted nights of my life on it. And it's a pain. But I think probably a lot of comics are like that because to worry and think about things so much is where you then find funny bits and stuff. Because you go over the same thing over and over again until you've deconstructed it all.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is, yes.
I've never met a totally serene comic.
No. They don't exist.
No, it's not the right personality type to be a comedian.
Everyone says to me, you go, oh, you're so chilled. I'm like, you don't know what's going on inside.
One of my upstairs neighbours with that, he goes, you're such a relaxed guy. And I'm like, I mean, absolutely not. Yeah, but it's nice that I give off that vibe.
It's that duck on the water thing.
Yeah.
You just, oh. I think I'm in a weird position now where I've just turned 50 and I feel, I feel pretty chilled with who I am.
Yeah.
But I'm desperately panicking about, again, the what ifs, like shit. I've got no other options now. Comedy has to work.
It's horrible, isn't it? Yeah. I was thinking about it the other day because my partner's doing, she's doing a degree on the side, like a part-time degree. And I was like, well, especially during lockdown where I was like, I might have to retrain. This might all fall apart. Yeah. And, you know, it's never going to be the same again, which I was cool with. Mm. But I was going, I've got nothing. I've not got a degree. I've got nothing to fall back on. What the fuck can I do?
Even it used to be, we'd say, oh, I'll go and stack shelves. Couldn't do that. Couldn't do it. They wouldn't employ me.
Well, the problem is you go, why is there a 13-year gap in your CV? And you're like, well, because I was being a... There's no transferable skills, really. Maybe we'd be good in a call centre or something like that. But there's a lot of things I go, well, maybe I'll go and do that. Or I don't want to go back to uni for 3 years. I can't afford to.
No, exactly. But that's it. To do anything else is expensive.
I think 50 grand's worth of debt. No, I'm all right, thanks.
Mate,
I've got Edinburgh's that I'm still paying off. I still owe Avalon $9,000.
Oh, God. But I worry at the minute. I see what's going on in the world. Like, the leaders everywhere they're just losing grip of everything.
Yeah, of course.
So that bothers me. So now I'm like, I need to stop looking at the news.
Yeah, like, I'm obsessed with, I think we're all going to die in a nuclear winter.
Yeah. When they were saying the other day, there was someone saying the other day that it's on the brink.
Yeah, it is.
Of a third world war. And you're like, fuck me. I mean, on the one hand, good. Can you bomb Barclays? I owe them alone.
But also, I'd be like, would I be conscripted? And that's me done within a week, I'm over the top.
Well, yeah, we both would, because it's between 18 and 60, isn't it? Or something.
Is it?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, will I be conscripted? And like, that's, but I'm not going to help.
I'd be right, I'd be like Dad's army.
The thing is, though, you'd be there and you'd be like, right, let's get some Russian bullets and shoot each other in the leg. Like, let's just go home. Like, I'm very much...
Take each other out.
Yeah. Well, it's what the Russian boys have been doing with Ukrainian bullets, haven't they? All these young lads. You know, but I think, God, if that goes on, like, you know, there's bigger things in the world worrying about, but I go, even that, I'm going, God, this war in Ukraine's terrible for them, but how's it going to affect me? Is it going to land on my doorstep? I'm like, well, you know, it's... Yeah. But it is, like, I stress about that all the time. I think... You know, I don't want to have kids because I think they're going to have to fight over water and rats. I'm convinced.
You know, yeah. Because I've my lads, and I'm like, I don't want them to go off to war. There's people now that were saying, I don't have, like you've just said, like, I don't have kids because I don't know what's going to happen in the future. And then I speak to my boys, and they're both like, give a shit, Dad. We'll fucking work it out.
Really?
Don't you worry about it.
That's quite good, though.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, shit, you're adults now. Yeah. They're 25 and 30. So they're like, Dad, we'll just stick some nails in a bat and we'll go hell for leather. Don't you worry about that. All right, good lads. They've been watching far too much Walking Dead.
that's problematic, isn't it? You go, no, they've got a plan. Is that worse than not having a plan? What does that say about them?
They're going to be the leaders, right? And, oh shit! Oh, created monsters.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I think, but I worry about that. It's not my concern. Mm. But once again, I'm thinking other people aren't worried about it enough.
No. We do overthink things. I do. I definitely do.
Yeah. Oh my God, absolutely. Yeah. Like, it's sort of the cornerstone of my personality.
Yeah.
Like, I worry about everything.
Yeah, you see it all the time. You know, people like inspirational quotes, like, live for the moment, live now. Don't, and you're like, you're right. You're absolutely right.
It's you
very
should do.
Difficult to do.
Of course it is.
You know, regret comes from looking back and
stress
and
from stress looking forward.
Looking forward. So try and be in the moment. But you're like, yeah, but I can't afford this bill. In the future, that is going to fuck me up.
But also, you know, I think... I always feel bad about things that happened in the past and stuff, but you think, well, you can't. It doesn't exist. Like you said, it doesn't exist anymore, does it? The past isn't a thing that exists. Like, it happened and then it's gone.
But, and the person that's thinking about the adult that you might have upset when you were a 16-year-old kid or whatever, it was like, they're not thinking about you as you are now.
No.
They've never seen you.
Exactly.
They just remember this 16-year-old kid being a dickhead to them when they were, whenever how old they were. So,
yeah, it's weird. It's weird, isn't it? I think, you know, you've got to... But then people say live in the moment. And the same people that say live in the moment are the ones that are getting upset online about things people said in the past. I always felt.
Yes.
You're like, you're always putting up these inspirational quotes about living in the moment, but you've just cancelled that dude for something he said 15 years ago when he's a different person genuinely sorry about
it. He's learned from it.
Yeah, exactly. You cancelled him, but Matt Lucas is fine for blacking up, is he? He's allowed to present Bake Off. It's a weird, I don't really get, look, I'm not a controversial person particularly,
we'll see what happens after
But, you know, when that, I think, a lot of people don't change. And I think there's a lot of people, you see what they've said, you're like, they're still like that. Yeah. Fuck them. But there's loads of people, you're like, oh man, you've thrown that guy's life or that woman's life away over one thing that they're not like that anymore. Yeah, they've understood that was unacceptable.
Yeah. Joe, it's funny. We've just been away. We went to Paris for a few days.
Love, I did see that.
Very nice.
Paris is fucking expensive.
Well, this is the thing. And when I got back, I did a gig last night, and I said, you know what? It's so good to be back and not feel like a total dumbass because I don't. I you think you know enough to get by.
Yeah.
But you don't really because you're panicking. You're panicking that you're trying to do it. So you go, I was like, so I get it when racists think that people from other countries, they go, oh, they're stupid. They are like this Uber driver who's thick. I'm like, he's a doctor.
Yeah.
It's just that he's here because this is all he can do for now because his country's on war.
It's on fire.
Yeah. And then they go, yeah, he's no doctor. He couldn't even say the numbers right. And you're like, mate. He's learning as he goes.
Mate, I mean, it's that thing, innit, of people who are like that, and then they go abroad, and they're the ones that are like, dos beeros, s'il vous plaît, you know? And you think, if you, like, I had a conversation with one of my dad's mates once about it, and he's very much like, you know, these immigrants. I went, right, if there was a civil war here, and it all broke out, I was like, what would you do? He's like, I'll get out of here as soon as possible. And you're like, yeah, of course you would. That's all they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, it's that whole thing of like, these people are coming over here and all they want to do is work and like live a life. They don't want to suck off the state.
Yeah.
They just want to reset their lives.
Also,
they're so grateful to be here. We've got loads of positions doing horrible jobs and they're willing to do them because they're so happy to not be there. Like, if they want to come here and work, like, fucking let them.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. Exactly. And the irony, like you say, is the fact that they, you know, first thing they do is fuck off somewhere else.
Yeah, but also there's the people that, you know, I know we had a guy who goes, but a lot of them aren't real, they're not real refugees, are they? And I'm like, but if they still want to come here and work, let them come here and work. It's fine. There's more jobs available than they can fill at the moment. Why not let them come? We're gagging for people to do jobs.
It's so small-minded.
Just let them come over and set up a life. It's fine.
But I had this argument with someone going, I don't know why we have borders still, because we still, and then it was like, but you know, people will invade and people do this, that and the other. And you're like, but surely, if we were a bit more fluid around the world, people were allowed to travel a bit more easier. I don't know. I think the perfect example is,
You know, you can study in England for how much it costs in England. You have to pay for a visa if you're from a Commonwealth country, apart from all the African ones where you've got to pay for a visa still. Like, you know, you get free visa and you think, oh, that's all based in that. And even the Ukraine thing, like, you know, you go to the airports and it's like, welcome from Ukraine. I was at Stansted last week and it's like all these signs saying, if you come from Ukraine, we'll help. And they're like, let them all in because they're white.
Basically,
is the problem, isn't it? Well, even though Syria and Ukraine are closer than we are to the Ukraine, people still, because it's Europe, you know, in quotes, it's European, so it's fine.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
This is why they talk about systemic racism. This is what it is.
Yeah.
In effect. And they go, no, it's not. You go, but they'll come over here and they'll fuck things up and they'll just, and you're like, no, they won't. What are you talking about? This is people the same as that. That's the thing as well. Being lucky enough to have traveled around, you start to realize that people all around the world are fundamentally the same.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Different cultures, different things on top. But fundamentally, at a base level, we're all the same.
We're all just trying to fill the time before we die, really, aren't we? And also, but it's that thing of all people want to do is look after their family. And you know what? People, and I understand why people get pushed into like extreme movements because they believe that's the way to do it. But people, all they want to do is feed themselves and their family, have a roof over their heads, and that's pretty much it. Yeah. If that's all sorted, but some people think the way to do that is to stop foreigners coming in or whatever, and are misguided. But you just think it's fine. You know, I think the best way to cure racism is you just introduce people to people of different races and they go, oh, they're all right, aren't they?
Yeah.
Although probably there are people that go, oh, yeah, but he's all right, but not the others. And you're like, but they're all like, they're all the same. Like, everyone's the same in the world.
I've said this on stage, but I think we should introduce, it's your duty as a parent to introduce your kids to decent music from all places.
Yeah.
And that's how I was introduced to Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye at a very young age. So I learned about all these other things, like, you know, Sly and the Family Stone and things like that. So I learned about oppression and people of different ethnicities and sexualities and all these things from music.
Yeah.
And that's what you need to do. I know people that are hugely racist that hated music when we were growing up.
Yeah.
They liked whatever was fashionable, but they weren't really asked.
No.
And now they're horrible racists.
It's so strange. And I think, like, where does that all stop as well, I suppose? Because you go, you know, we're going to... If Scotland are going to break out of the UK, then England. I was like, then do we go down to counties? Like, what? Like, how much smaller can you get, really? Whereas, yeah. I like the whole idea of globalisation and going everywhere and it being easy and everything. But I think that's, we've ended that, haven't we? Especially now the war's started.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that iron curtain that's come back down is going to is going to divide the world up even more.
But it comes down to power, doesn't it? I mean, in an ideal world, as you just said, it would be lovely if everything was just opened up.
Yeah.
And you could just swan about and go wherever you want to go. But there's the people in power. That's why they're in power. They want this is mine and you can't have it.
It's weird, I suppose. And I guess, that, you know, making people scared of other people from other countries is an easy way to keep things in check.
Yeah.
Even though it makes us all not very happy, I think, you know.
Yeah, deep down.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they should start putting ecstasy in the water, MDMA.
Just a bit. Have you ever seen that Mitchell and Webb sketch where everyone in the world, the wars have stopped because everyone's had just under 2 pints? And basically, like, there's no more violence in the world. Everyone's friends. There's no racism because everyone's had 1¾ pints. And then it ends by the guy has 2 pints and starts World War III. But like that, just a little bit, just to take the edge off everyone.
Just take the edge off.
Yeah.
It'd be lovely.
Ecstasy in the water would be a good way of doing that.
I just remember it being...
Are they fighting? Oh, no, they're touching each other's hair because it feels nice. That is it, isn't it? God, no, they're wrestling. No, it's just he's got a nice feeling jumper.
Yeah, he's had velour. I remember when ecstasy first came around and the mood was just different.
Really?
It was really chilled. Everyone was like looking forward to the weekend because you knew you were going to just feel so elated.
Yeah.
When it started, because we were doing acid and all sorts in the late 80s, early
90s. Really?
Yeah, yes. And it was fucking great. You just look forward to the weekend because you knew that was when you were going to get it on and it was just going to be...
It's weird, isn't it? Because like alcohol is the problematic one, I think, really, isn't it? Like, which, once again, isn't good for your mental health and stuff long term, but it makes people not very nice.
2 pints, mate.
2 pints is the perfect, where everyone's mates, and then someone has 3 pints, you stand on their foot and all hell breaks loose. It's like, you know, it's like at football matches, I suppose. It's all booze, isn't it, that causes all the problems, all the fighting and stuff. If at football matches you legally had to take acid or MDMA to go in, it'd be fine. They wouldn't be arguing, would they? Burnley and flipping Manchester United. They'd all be cuddling each other.
Can you imagine watching a football match on acid?
Who's winning? Oh, I think it's the Crocodiles over there. I'm not sure. I can't tell.
It take the ball a fortnight to just go across.
And they're cuddling the ground again.
And the whole ground is naked.
Yeah.
Running around. Oh, now we're all going to buy a bar together. Yeah. We're going to live together forever. Do you drink?
Yeah, I do drink.
And does it affect the medication?
No. So... Well, it can do for some people. I find it's fine because I'm sort of I've been on it for like so long and I'm pretty stable on it.
Yeah.
But I will find if I have like a period of not drinking, if I have a period of like going out loads or going to loads of weddings and stuff, I have to have a detox because I find like I get really anxious and all those things.
Yeah.
So I've had like loads of periods of like 2 or 3 months not drinking and I feel much better for it.
Yeah.
Like just day to day, like I'm up in the morning. Also, I'm much better mentally when I'm productive. Like even today, coming and doing this, I you know, went to the dentist this morning, I've got a gig tonight, like a few things, and I don't think about things. Whereas when you're not drinking, the next day's a write-off for me.
Yeah.
The next 2 days, realistically. So then I, you know, cancel things, I can't be bothered, you know, I sit in bed all day, sit watching TV, I don't shower, and then that makes you feel shit as well. So for me, like, yeah, as I've gotten a bit older, I've started drinking less because I can't hack it as much, and I feel better for not drinking as much.
I go in phases. At the minute, I'm in a phase where there's a lot of booze around.
Yeah.
But then I'll get to a point, I'm like, my socks hurt, so I'm going to stop. Because it's getting silly.
Do you feel worse when you're drinking as well, like day to day?
Yeah, you just don't get anything done. You get nothing done.
And that makes you feel bad because you're not getting anything done. Yeah, and then you worry about life because you're not doing enough. And then you fall into the spiral.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, you think, oh, I've not been emailing people back and sorting out work because I just can't be arsed.
Yeah. And you get to that's the thing as well. You get, it's like people message me on this, and you go, and I say to people, like, message me, I will get back to you eventually. Yeah, yeah. But you'll read the message, and then because my brain's like, oh, oh, a lovely message. Oh, yeah, I should reply to that. Reply to it then.
Yeah.
Why have I gone, yeah, I'll do that later?
I find that everything feels like a mountain when you're not in the right headspace, and booze puts me not in the right headspace. So, like, even, you know, I went out for some drinks the other week, and, like, the next 2 days, like, I just didn't get back to people properly, and I, like, sort of probably missed out on a few bits and bobs because I just wasn't quick enough.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just... Whereas I'm much better. So I try and booking gigs, and I'll get to the day and I'll be like, oh, I can't be asked to drive to Lichfield. But it's a night where I'm not booze, like, and I try to, like, drive everywhere because then I, because I like a drink. Like, if I'm comparing, especially, I'll have a drink at a gig. And that doesn't work for me because I'm not very good at having a couple of drinks, because then someone will go, do you want to come and meet me afterwards, especially in London? I'm like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah, yeah.
And that always ends in tears.
Yeah, that's where I'm at now. I have to go either yes or no.
Yeah.
I can't go, oh, yeah, I'll have one. And then I'll go and do a thing. I'm like, I just have to go, I can't.
Yeah.
Because it will just end up 3, 4, 5. I don't drink, you know, 10 pints, but it's 3, 4, or 5. And then you're like...
yeah, you hit that point, don't you, where... So, I, you know, I've noticed, especially during lockdown and stuff, like, I just can't... Like, I used to go out until, like, 4 or 5 in the morning and then wake up in the morning and be fine.
Yeah.
Whereas 5 pints now, that's me done the next day.
Yeah.
Like, it's just... I've hit that... And it's just getting 1 pint less every 6 months, basically, is what I'm finding.
It's like last night, I went to a gig impromptu. I didn't know I was going to go. Just thought, oh, I've got time. I'll just, I was on my way back from the airport.
What'd you go to?
And it's a gig that we do in Limehouse called the Cutting Room Floor. And I was on my way back. And I'm like, oh, I've actually got that bit I want to try.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck it. Yeah. So I went in. And then later, all of a sudden, I'm 4 pints in.
Yeah.
Because I'm just sat around chatting to everybody. And
that's the problem is, I'm better when I'm working with people I'm not that bothered about because I don't hang out. But if I'm on a gig and, like, say you're there or, like, there's people that you go, oh, yeah, I'll have a few drinks. This is the problem with comedy is everyone's really, like, most people are really interesting and really nice.
Yeah.
And you don't see each other every day, like, a normal job. So when you do see each other, it's a treat. But you have that treat 5 days a week with 5 different people. So you want to catch up with people and things, you know, because you don't all see each other as often as you should because the way the circuit works.
Yeah.
Like, I see you all the time at the moment. It feels like we're in a little phase, aren't we? But then we won't see each other for a year.
No.
And that's how it is, you know.
We haven't seen each other. I mean, we did that night. There was that night we did Jonglers. I was with my ex-wife.
Yeah. And then we didn't see each other for years, did we?
Fucking years, man.
But then recently, we've gigged together quite a bit.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a bit easier. But yeah, you're like, oh, I've not seen you in a year. Let's go and have a catch-up and 7 pints. And then you're fucked the next day.
Yeah. So I'm at that now. I'm at, I have to go, no.
I go, so I'm like you, I have, like, phases of, like, being like, I'm boozing at the moment, and then I just sort of knock it on the head for a bit.
Yeah.
And that works for me. When I feel like I'm starting to lag and not be, and I don't, like, I can do a gig after a couple of pints, but doing a gig hungover, I can be, like, there was one I did, I was at Top Secret the other week, and I was on stage, and I was like, I'm gonna faint on stage, because I was so hungover. I was like, I think I might, but there's a point I paused, I did a joke, and one of my mates was there, weirdly, and he went, did you pause because you regretted doing the joke? Because it was a bit about why I don't, you know, I'm a white man, but I don't want to be a white man anymore. And this sort of, like, whole thing about how Black Lives Matter, I'm going to be, I did a heritage DNA test. And it's sort of, it can get a bit eggy if they're not on board. And I paused and he went, oh, did you regret doing that bit? And I went, no, I thought I was going to collapse because I'm so hanging. And I was just like, I can't. And then you're not on your game. And then, you know, a club see you shit and they don't want to book you again and it causes more issues.
Yeah. Well, Kate said, my missus, she said, you know, you... She said, I've seen you drinking at gigs. I've seen you without. She said, you shouldn't do it. Don't do it because you're so much sharper when you're not having a drink.
Oh, and there's that horrible thing when you are drinking or not and someone says something in an audience. Like, I've been hungover before and someone's yelled something out and you're just that split second too slow.
Yeah.
And everyone goes, he's not really good, is he? Whereas when you're on a really good roll, you can just be straight out the gates with it.
Yeah. And I know my body's really good at, once I stop, and start getting healthy, my body's really good at going, oh, we're doing this now.
Yeah.
And it really adapts to it really well.
Yeah.
But it's getting my brain to say, this is what we need to do.
Oh, yeah. And look, and I've been through phases where I didn't drink for months. When I was at Virgin, they were treating me so badly at the end of it, like they were definitely wanting me gone. Like, I was going out and drinking every night after my radio show.
Really?
So it finished at 7. Yeah. And when I stopped, I had withdrawal.
Right.
Because I was drinking with my producer at the time, who it turns out ended up going to rehab, but I was his drinking, and I was like, oh, he's drinking every night, not realising he was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And he's clean now and stuff, which is great, but I was sort of drinking that much with him every night, two bottles of wine a night. And then when I stopped, I had withdrawal and it was awful.
Of course.
And when all that finished, I was like, I feel so much better about life that I'm just kind of like not anxious all the time and all those things that booze brings.
That's been a horrible situation to be in.
It was weird.
Could they not just terminate the contract? Or?
Well, yeah, they had to buy me out.
Ah.
So I didn't think they wanted to, and also they hadn't found someone to replace me yet. It went from them going, we're going to give you a 2-year contract, we're going to up your money. 3 weeks later, when Chris Evans joined, they were like, oh, it's a 6-month contract, you don't really fit in here anymore. And I just won presenter of the year for our radio group.
What?
And then they were like, yeah. So gave me an award and then went, you're not right for here anymore. And they just messed me around like that. I couldn't do anything right. And it just sort of sent me into a real spiral.
Yeah.
And I wasn't very well, but it's probably the worst my mental health's ever been. And that's when I sort of went, I'm going to quit. Showbiz, I can't hack it anymore.
Yeah.
And ever since I kind of like was okay with not ever doing this again, comedy the lot, I've been much healthier about it. I've got a much healthier relationship with work. Because I started at 18, it was my whole personality, my job.
Yeah.
Whereas now it isn't so much.
Right.
But yeah, I've drunk way too much and then not at all. And I prefer not at all.
Yeah, yeah. How did you feel? It must have been, if something's going on and I have to go to a place and have to keep going there and I know they don't want me there.
Yeah, it was awful. It was horrible.
How did you fucking battle that?
I didn't very well. No. It was basically the answer. Like, I wasn't very good at battling it. And it was, and I sort of felt like I couldn't leave because it was a really good job and I didn't have anything else. Like, it was a real, but I was coming towards the end of my contract and our agent I spoke to and I was like, I want out of this. And then they went, we're actually just going to buy you out the last 3 months. And I was like, oh, thank God for that.
Wow.
It was the best thing that ever happened.
Yeah.
But then even then you're going, oh, can I get other things and all that? And it's been fine. It's been 3 years. But it was really bad. Like, it was sort of, that whole thing of not being wanted all of a sudden and all that. Yeah. Maybe I do need that in my life.
But this has come up a couple of times on episodes very recently. Excuse me. I just had a big swig of orange juice. Sorry.
San Pellegrino, you've changed.
I'm so middle class.
You always talk about these working class comedians who aren't really working class, and he sat drinking a San Pellegrino.
I bridged a gap between the two. My dad was very middle class. My mum's very working class.
Oh, really?
I'm in between the two. Yeah.
See, I'm first generation middle class. Like, my parents weren't middle class when they grew up.
Right.
But they got middle class, and then I'm the first one that was middle class from birth.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we used to live in a three-bed semi-detached.
We have all that. And then my dad started doing all right, and then I'm not working class, but my dad would consider himself working class. Yeah. Like, my mum grew up in a council house and all that, but I'm definitely middle class. Little aside, but anyway, you were saying, sorry.
I can't remember what I was saying. Oh, yeah. It's that thing where there's a moment in the industry where you're the centre of it and people are all over you and you must feel incredible. And in that moment where they go, nah, not anymore.
Yeah, and I've had that moment about 3 or 4 times.
Really?
Yeah. Like, but I was speaking to, I don't think she might be saying this, Zoe Lyons, a lot of our colleagues have these kind of amazing trajectories. They just sort of like break and go up and up and up. But the reality is most of us, it's like 3 steps up the flight of stairs, then it's a plateau, and then it's a couple of steps down again, and it's sort of up and down all the time. And she was saying, there's been points where I've been on a plateau, but realistically it was a downward facing one.
Yeah, right.
And then it goes up again all of a sudden. I think those, being able to roll with those down times is really hard. Mm. And in most jobs, people don't have that, where all of a sudden like you make all this progress and then it just stops, and then actually you take 10 steps back.
But that
is how this job is, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You get some success and then no success, and then you feel like you're treading water. That's hard because people like forward motion in their lives.
Absolutely, yeah.
And when you don't have that, that's kind of difficult. And especially there where it was like, not only was there no more forward motion, but it was like, oh, we love you. Oh, we hate you now because someone else has changed our mind. And we're doing everything we can to get rid of you. And knowing, like, they were interviewing people for my job when I was in the building and stuff like that.
No, you can't.
Yeah, mate, it was madness. But that's the industry, isn't it? It's pretty brutal.
It is brutal, yes. And there's not a lot of empathy.
No, it's very cutthroat. And I suppose, but then the problem was I shouldn't have stayed on the radio as long as I did. Mm. I was there for 4.5 years. I should have done 3 and knocked it on the head and left on my own terms rather than waiting. But it was comfortable.
Yeah, of course.
It was a very, very nicely paid job where I went in every day and did like 3 hours work. It was fucking great.
Yeah, of course.
But then I let it get to a point where them getting rid of me was a problem because I was like, this is my life now, rather than just another thing I did.
And then you went and did Coach Strip.
And then I went and did Coach Strip. I did Dancing on Ice in between, thank you very much.
Yeah, you did, sorry.
But those are both, they were COVID tax bill bookings. It's the kind of thing I went, oh yeah, maybe I wouldn't normally do this. But it was all, I mean, Coach Strip was hard work.
Do you know what? I've never, I just think I've forgotten you did You did the dancing.
I did. 1 week I lasted once Rufus Hound dropped out.
Yeah, that's it. I forgot about that. I did apologize.
Most people have, which is quite nice.
So I don't watch it. So I was.
No, of course you like.
I was only aware of it because, you know, I know.
Nans
you.
Know who I am now. Yes. Yeah. People go, were you? It's like women, will, elderly women will come up to me now, especially up north, and go, you should have stayed in another week. And I'm like, thank you very much. Don't come to see me on tour, though. You won't like it.
But that's the other thing as well, isn't it? Like the your persona,
the demographic that, like, yeah. I've done loads of telly, but the kind of things I've done don't sell tickets really. Mm. So I can do little tours, but I don't do like massive rooms. I'm doing like 100 seaters, which is, and then filling them is a pleasant surprise.
Coach trip though looks like, I don't know if I'd want to spend any time with the people. No disrespect, I'm sure they're all lovely, but
the thing is, they're all individually lovely, but as a group, it was like me and Will, who I did it with, never really done a show like that. Whereas a lot of them were like reality stars, and it was just carnage because they were all coming in quite happy for the drama and stuff, whereas we just wanted an easy ride.
Well, that's it, isn't it? There are a lot of reality TV is just drama.
Yeah, like this one girl came in from The Valleys, which was like an MTV show years ago, and she was just drama straight away, and we'd all been getting on all right.
Yeah.
And then she was a cat amongst the pigeons, and we're like, the first thing she did, she was like, I don't like you and Will, like, you're doing my edit. And none of us had said anything, like, we're all being really polite to each other. And we're like, okay, cool.
They understand how television works.
They understand that that's what they want. They want a villain.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was weird. It was I liked it. Like, it was all right, but it was a weird experience. Because you're sort of like in this situation with people who, you're together sort of 15 hours a day from the off, and they film everything. And we were just sort of like slightly bemused by the whole thing. Like in our interviews and stuff, we're just like, what is, are we mad or are they mad? Like, we couldn't work it out because everyone else thought everything was normal.
Yeah. I can't imagine what it must have been like. I don't watch a lot of television, and having recently watched, what was it called? Married at First Sight Australia. I was sitting there watching it the other day. I went, this just fighting.
Yeah.
What are they doing?
Yeah, it's like, but it's the same as, like, I love Four in a Bed is my favourite. Do you know what Four in the Bed is? Four in a Bed is where four couples who own B&Bs go and stay in each other's B&Bs and rate them. At the end of the stay, you give them how much money you think it's worth.
Ooh.
And like, so you can overpay or underpay if it's been brilliant or bad. Yeah. And they mark each other down over the silliest things. And then they all sit around a table and have an argument about it. It's the best part of the show. It's amazing. Them just being like, well, I feel like your sheets weren't of the right thread count and shit like that.
Oh, fuck off.
Yeah, it's fucking brilliant. Well, I only had one sausage at breakfast, and I feel like for the money you were asking, that wasn't acceptable. And the thing is, it's a bit like, I think when people are harsh to you about comedy, I don't mind it when people are like, that show you made was shit. And I'm like, yeah, because I was one of 80 people working on it. Yeah. It doesn't offend me so much. But when it's my stand-up, which is me, it's the same with B&B owners. It's their life.
Yeah,
they live in this B&B, and it's, you know, it's all-consuming. Mm. And they all get really upset about it. And I understand people picking that apart because it's so personal.
It's
your house, basically, isn't it?
Imagine you get it to a point where you go, this is beautiful, this is it, it's perfect.
And it's long hours and all that kind of shit. And then someone goes, oh, yeah, you only did one sausage and I didn't feel welcome. Oh. And then it's amazing. I love it, but it's chaos.
Yeah, all reality TV shows, it's always just fighting. But that's why we watch it. That's why, because we want
Like, I remember years ago going in, I did the I'm a Celeb spin-off, and my complaint was, I was like, they're all getting on too well. On it, I was just going, they're all getting on. It's a nightmare. Because you want that bit of, you want some friction to watch.
Well, we were going to, so they do another roast battle.
Yeah.
And they were doing, it started in Edinburgh. And Phil Ellis and I got asked to do it.
Lovely.
And we were going to do it. And we both said, why don't we go the other way?
Yeah.
And we'll do it. We'll be really nice to each other, really funny. And we got a message going, don't do that. So we went, well, fuck it, we're not doing it.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to do it. Because we were like, we like each other too much. It would have been, we go the other way. And they went, no, it's not the spirit. It's not in keeping with what we do.
See, I did Roast Battle with Angela Barnes, and it was fine when we were insulting each other. The worst insult I've ever had is when someone else used me as an insult to another comic. It was Ramesh Ranganathan insulting Carl Donnelly.
Excellent.
And he was like, well, it was something along the lines of, you think you've got a career, but I don't think so, son. You know things are bad when you're competing for jobs with Matt Richardson. Like, Rom and I are mates. And I was like, fucking... And that was probably 10 years ago, and I still remember it. Whereas I couldn't tell you anything Angela Barnes said to me. I was like, why am I getting dragged into this? This isn't fair. That hurt more than anything, because I wasn't there. I didn't consent to being roasted.
It's going to help your OCD.
Yeah, fucking...
Mate.
And I can't even go to Egger's house because it's behind gates now.
Yeah, just throwing eggs over the fence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The security guard comes out. What the fuck is going on here? All you can hear is the plop of them going in the pool.
Oh, God. You're not even breaking.
No. Not even within 50 feet of the house. It's a nightmare.
Oh, God. Mate, honestly.
It was easier to do it when he was in a semi-detached. Fucking success, eh? He's changed. Can't egg his house anymore. But even now, like, you know, that was 10 years ago and that stuck still with me. I'm like, oh, that hurt. Because I was the butt of it, and it got a round of applause. It got a laugh and a round of applause. Because everyone's like, yeah, that is bad, isn't it? Fucking hell, Carl.
Oh, mate. But you're... Oh, God. That's brilliant. The plop of the eggs in the pool. That's dumb, isn't it? But you've got... I can't carry on. So you're OCD. You've got... This is the... Because I knew someone a few years ago, and they were going, oh, my OCD. I'm like, you haven't got OCD. Your flat's a dump.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, there's this sort of preconception about it that it's like the John Richardson version of OCD, where everything's tidy and neat and just so. But a lot of people, this sort of pure O, it's not about the cleaning and the obsessive habits. It's just the obsessing. And it's debilitating. Like, there's been times in my life where I couldn't clean and do things because, like, you're like trapped by it almost. You're sort of in this prison with it, really. Yeah. And what's weird is it's your voice, but it's things that you don't really think, you know, it's this extra. Right. And a really good bit of therapy I got was years ago, someone said, a therapist said, you've got to separate it. You've got to accept that it's a separate being almost in your head that you've got no control over. Yeah. And as soon as I did that, I found it easy because you go, okay, that's not me. That's not me saying that to myself. That's this other thing that I can't control. And that was really helpful. Fuck, this kind of like, it's the same with depression and like worrying and things. It's that separation of self and thoughts you can't control that aren't needed, these intrusive thoughts.
Do you know what? That's really interesting because recently I've been going, why am I feeling this way? I know I'm stressed about this and this.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be like pressing down on me so much. There shouldn't be like this emptiness in my heart. And then I'll start to work it out and I go, this is something else. This is a medical thing. This isn't just worry. This is something else.
But when you're in the midst of it.
Yeah.
Because also, there's that problem if you go, oh, maybe this isn't me. And then it's going, of course this is you.
Yeah.
Of course it's you. You can't beat it. Yeah. And I think a lot of people get stuck in depression because they're like, no, I'm not depressed. This is justified. I should feel like this. Mm. And, you know, it convinces you that you're a piece of shit or whatever. And then you accept it. And you accept that. I remember when it was really bad, when it first kicked off, I didn't go and see anyone for like 2.5 years. And I was kind of going, well, this is how my head works now. It's never going to change. And I didn't think I should go to the doctor. So I was like, this is me, clearly. Yeah. And it's really hard to break out of that and go, no, this isn't right. Because you're so low. It's sort of kicking you while you're down, it feels like.
Yeah, of course. So the medication.
Medication really helps. Yeah. And also, I just started, I don't talk about it on stage particularly. I've got a couple of jokes about it that I've done over the years. But just talk about it. I'm very open about kind of going, yeah, I've got it, like, when it's affecting me, I tell my partner or my friends, like, how are things? And I go, actually, like, it's not great at the moment. Like, I'm not in a great place.
Yeah.
And I find even just saying that, being like, oh, it's a bit, my, you know, because they all know I've got it. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's sort of kicking up a bit. And then they sort of are more attentive and, like, check in with you. And that's really helpful.
That's cool.
Just sharing your little secret to know that you're not dealing with it alone. Even if they can't do anything, at least they go, at least someone else knows. That feels so much better.
Yeah, the relief. It's funny, actually, because my flatmate, Sweeney, who I love dearly, I love him, and he does obsess about his weight a little bit. It's not problematic. He just wants to make sure he stays how he is. And, and he's about to turn 40, so that's quite stressful in a lot of ways. And it's been a couple of times the other day, I said to him, you're on your own too much. His missus lives in America, so he's always like waiting to go and see her or for her to come over here. And he talks to her every night on the phone and things via Zoom, blah, blah, blah. But he spends a lot of time on his own. And it was building up and I was really worried about him. So in the end, we were just in the kitchen the other day and I just blurted out, I'm really worried about you.
Really?
Yeah. And then we had a really nice chat. He went, no. He goes, no, I'm fine. I'm completely fine. And we had a really nice chat. But it took me to just blurt out, are you all right? Because I was stressing about it.
Yeah.
And then today, we got back from our trip and then I got in last night and then there wasn't any milk in the fridge and the butter had gone. And then I'm like, don't tell me he's been like this for a couple of days. where he's just been working, coming home, going to bed, and he hasn't got any provisions and all that. So on the way here, I nipped in, because I was like, I might get a haircut, have a chat with him. And so I went in and I'm like, oh, he's a trimmer, he didn't have time, and blah, blah, blah. I went, there wasn't any milk in the fridge. And it's not because I wanted it, I'm just worried that you've not been looking after yourself. And he went, no, he goes, it only ran out yesterday.
But
he goes, yeah.
You know, you might catch him where he goes, oh no, it ran out yesterday. But sometimes it does take someone to go, are you all right? Before you even realise that you're not all right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's been times where someone says to me, like, are you sure you're okay? And you go, no, actually, I'm not. Yeah. But it took you asking me that question. So it's important to do it. Yeah. And you know, I think it's just that, isn't it? You don't have to have the big in-depth chat about it, but just going, oh no, actually, like someone to bounce things off of to work out what is going on in your head.
Exactly.
Because we're so head down sometimes. And I find that I'm much better when I'm out, see it like socialising and little things that are nice to go and do in the week, like having a coffee with someone or whatever it is, like keep me much more buoyant than if I've just gigging home and all that, and then, you know, sleeping all day because you've been out late and all that. I need things to get me up and around.
Same, man. This is why now when someone says to me, do you want to meet for coffee? I say, yeah, and I go.
Yeah.
I actually stick to it.
I'm always like, because I'll book it in and it'll come to it and I'll be like, oh, I don't know if I can be asked to go to like Southeast London for a coffee. And then I do it and I go, actually, I'm really glad I did. I never come back from it and go, what a waste of time.
No, never.
I always feel better when I leave.
Yeah.
I think you're probably the same. I need like interaction and human contact,
yes,
really.
Absolutely.
Lots of people don't, but for me, that makes my life 10 times better.
That's why it's nice when you're on your own. You know, it's not loneliness. You know, I'm on my own for a bit because I want to go around a record shop or do whatever. But I know I've got people to come back to.
Yeah, totally.
And that's the difference.
I remember years ago, it was really bad. I went and did some gigs in Switzerland. Do you remember the Up the Creek gigs in Switzerland? Did you ever go and do them?
Never did them, no.
For Jane. And I went with JJ Whitehead, who I didn't know at the time. And like, the weather was bad and all this. And like, he was sort of busy doing stuff. And I was just all day alone in a country I didn't know, in a flat. Yeah. And I was climbing the walls because I didn't have anything to go and do. And like, my mental health wasn't good. Whereas when I hung out with him, when we went for dinner every evening, everything was much better because like, I just had something to do. You know, I think that's a big, just keep yourself busy, basically.
Do you know what? You're right. I had a similar experience. I was in Dubai with Adam Rowe and Brennan Reese, two smashing fellas.
Yeah.
Love them dearly. But they're mates, and then they were going off, going to see some. There was some inspirational speaker doing a gig, and they went off to that, and it was like 190 quid or something for tickets. I'm like, I can't afford that.
No, I'm not going.
And they went off to that and do that, and they were off go karting and things like that. And then I was in my room, and I'm like, oh god, and I hadn't been sleeping very well. But then when we had dinner in the evening or breakfast, it was like, oh, this is lovely.
Yeah.
This is great. Yeah, you're right. You need to keep busy.
Sometimes I'm like, I'm really forcing myself on people, but they don't think like that. And also, if you have to force yourself on people and they're happy to have you there, do it. Just go. I think I'm very good at, like, my mates will be doing something, like they'll be like, oh, we're off to do this. It's not really your thing. I'm like, oh, come though.
Yeah.
Because I need to go and do something. Like, you know, when my girlfriend works away a lot, and when she's away, I'm like, oh, what are you doing? I'm going to come to that. I'm going to come and do, oh, we're going to go and see this band. I don't like them, but I'm coming.
Because
it just keeps me, I just need to keep busy and have little things that you're off to do and know they're coming along.
Yeah.
That's my sort of, that really helps me.
Brilliant.
But it's not for everyone,
no,
I understand, you know.
But sometimes, I mean, yeah, you don't want to put pressure on other people, but to say, like, do you mind if I join you?
Yeah.
Most of the time, I think there's been once we go, I'm doing something. All right, that's happened once or twice in my life. Most people go, yeah, sure, take a seat, mate.
It's like in Edinburgh. I always feel quite lonely in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
A bit like, I imagine like you, like I'm not on the conveyor belt of doing it every year. So I don't, you know, and there's like all the cliques up there and it's this own world. But sometimes a comic will be like, I'm going to go and see blah, blah. And I go, oh, can I come? And they're always like, yeah, of course you can come. But I think the problem is we're all so scared that people are going to go, oh no, actually, I'd rather you didn't.
Yeah.
Even though no one does that. People, if they're sat talking to you, they're quite happy for you to do things.
Absolutely.
I end up spending time with Phil Ellis, which is actually worse for my mental health.
He's been on here a couple of times.
Has he?
So,
I love Phil.
Can back that up. I'll see him this weekend, actually, at MacFest.
Oh, will you? I love, Phil's a really good mate of mine. But in the end, you know, I just go and see him every day because he's just like, yeah, come and hang out, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's so much better than sitting in your flat by yourself, looking at the walls going, this is miserable up here.
Well, that's the thing about Edinburgh. I've said this to loads of people that, you know loads of people up there, but because everyone's running around and busy, it can be a lonely place. You end up standing in a doorway, pissing with rain, and you're just like,
why am I here?
What am I doing?
And also, it's a lot of people who go, how's your show going? Not because they give a shit, because they want to tell you how their show is going. And you're just like, oh, it's a lot of people that you don't know, you know, you all know each other, but not that well.
No.
Like, I don't have loads of mates in comedy. Like, I've got a few, like, really good comedy mates. You know, I consider us mates and stuff.
Absolutely,
but, you know, there's, I don't have tons, whereas there's people where all their mates are the other comics, which is great, but I've never been like that really.
No.
And a lot of my mates don't do Edinburgh and think, oh, you know, don't. So up there, I'm like, oh, I don't, I'm not one of the cool kids who everyone wants to hang out with. So it's a bit tricky.
You see all these photos of them stood, like, sat around long tables.
Yeah, you're like, they all go in the, oh, they all went to the zoo today. Cool. And I'm sort of individually get on with all of them quite well, you're just not in the group to get the invite. You sort of everyone will go, oh yeah, Matt Richardson's lovely, but they don't think to invite you. So you just sat by yourself after you've died on your ass for an hour.
That's it.
Thinking, what is this?
I'll take you to the zoo, mate.
All right, we'll go to the zoo. Right, well, I don't think I'll ever go to Edinburgh again, but yeah, if I can avoid it.
This has been lovely, mate.
Yeah, thanks for
really appreciate you coming down.
It's been lovely. It's been great.
It's been fucking great.
It's just nice to see you.
It's lovely to see you. Where can we find you on the socials?
At Matt Richardson 3 on everything. Whatever. I do all of them. You know, I'm young. I tick the tocks.
Yeah, you do.
I snap the chats.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't Snapchat, but I do all the others.
I'm on TikTok, but I don't know. I've yet to really do anything on it.
Yeah.
I know people my age are doing brilliant videos. But
yeah, people like it. Yeah. You know what? There's that thing that's a perception that it's for young people, but whatever you're into, there's a corner of TikTok for it.
Yeah,
so I'm into planes, right? I'm really into planes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like aircraft. And I follow loads of people that are into aircraft. So all I get is like lovely videos I like from plane spotters.
Do you know what? That's amazing. What's his name? Mike something is an actor, but he's also an artist. He paints.
Yeah.
He's brilliant. He paints planes.
That's it.
And it's on Facebook. I'll send you the link.
Yeah, please.
It's stunning. It's absolutely stunning. And he painted a Vulcan the other day. And a Vulcan is one of my favourite.
Yeah. Oh, is it really?
I remember when I was a kid seeing him going over when the Falkland War was on. I remember being at school and one went over and it just looks
They're
so
huge,
impressive.
Aren't they? Yeah.
And so I've loved them ever since. But my youngest son was a huge plane.
Really?
Fanatic when he was a kid. I think he still does. He's in a band now. He's a drummer in a band, so he's all cool and that. But we still send each other pictures of like a Spitfire taking
off. Oh, really?
Yeah, man.
See, my thing is commercial airliners. Like, that's
really?
What. Yeah, how sad is that? I'm not even into the exciting ones. I'm into the buses of the sky.
But massive one that got destroyed, the Ukrainian one.
Yeah, yeah, the Antonov
AN-225,
I think it is. But,
I think. Yeah. No, you don't.
I think just, like, you know.
Just on the top of my head.
100%. But yeah, Matt, I love it. Like, I'm really sad about it. Really sad. Like, I'm doing Mastermind and my specialist subject is Concorde.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm a saddo.
Did
for
you
playing.
Ever see it flying?
No, never, because it stopped in 2001, 2002. Jeez, so man. I never, and I'd love to have gone on it, but it was like 12 grand round trip.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Yeah,
but you
stupid.
Get from London to New York in half an hour.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's 35 minutes, yeah.
But I remember that when I was a kid, you always knew Concorde was coming over.
Yeah.
Because the noise is unmistakable and unlike anything else you've ever heard.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Like it was so unique. But yeah, I'm into I'm like saddo for planes.
Surprisingly
oh, I love
small
it.
As well. Concorde.
Yeah. It's only tiny. It's only two seats each side, isn't it? But it used to grow. Interesting fact. It used to grow 9 inches during the flight because of the heat of it. It would expand.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes. They made it so it could grow. See, look, yeah, oh, interesting.
I did, yeah.
I'm reading a book about it at the moment, aren't I, to swat up.
Of course you are. Well, good luck on Mastermind.
Thanks, mate. It was lovely to see you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, man.
Insane in the membrane.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk, shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.